Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Welcome back to Out of the Abyss. Here with you as always, Lot, Pip, and Jake.
Hello.
Hello.
Today, boys, let's continue our series on Mothman. Mothman Part 2.
Did you say Mothman?
Mirthman?
Martha Man, dude.
One and only. His side B is so powerful.
So we started last week with some bizarre encounters in Point Pleasant with weird people, and we finished with flying red-eyed monster that was chasing around teenagers on back roads and a police press conference to the public, being like, hey, so this is real and weird and it's going on. So I want to know, like, during this last week, in between episodes, what stuck with you the most? Was there anything about this story that you just kept thinking about, being like, what the fuck?
Definitely the red eyes, 100%.
It seems so weird that the cops would be like, hey, this is real and weird and is happening. I wish we had more of that.
That is something that I want to touch on at the end of the episode, actually. I've got a bit of news on that.
Oh, give me the deets.
Juice me later. Up, dude.
Juice us.
Afterwards. Remind me when I'm wrapping up. And when we wrap up our Mothman conversation, be like...
I need you to remind you.
Lot, didn't you have UFO news? All right, that's fine.
The viewers will remind us. It's on you, viewers, if we forget. Yeah. Remind us.
Which chat, yeah. Wake up.
So I just want to note...
Any reminders in the chat?
I just want to note before we dive in. Remember that bit about like how as the teenagers left town, they saw a dead dog, and on the return trip, the body of the dog was gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I confirmed that little detail. I went through and I found the original police reports. And oh, Roger shit. Scarberry explicitly notes the dog in his report. And the reports, by the way, are fucking terrifying. These people are scared as hell.
Seeing the actual police report feels like it would make that seem a lot more real.
Yeah. So... after the police in Point Pleasant give their conference, people reacted about the way that you expect Americans to react to something like that.
Just fucking shoot it, dude.
Yeah, they got a bunch of guns and everyone was going up for drives by the old abandoned buildings. And just to clarify, like, the sources that I keep finding, they alternate between saying that it was a TNT plant and that it was a power plant. So
I mean, TNT is sort of a power.
True.
Very powerful.
Explosives are power.
Yeah, dude.
So yeah, people kept going up by the old abandoned buildings that the creature had been spotted near. And Keel notes in his book that Point Pleasant was a town of 6,000 people, 22 churches, and no bar rooms. So Mothman was almost a welcome addition. What follows is like an insane rash of sighting. Those teenagers saw Mothman. Mothman chased him in their car. And now all of a sudden it was like... a businessman who's approaching retirement. Older guy, well-respected, steps outside because his dog was barking. So what the hell? Steps outside, he's faced with a 7-foot-tall, gray, bird-like humanoid creature that just stared at him before turning and flying away.
Yeah, that's fine.
The guy freaks out. He enters his house. He was so pale and shaken that his wife, like, thought that he was having a heart attack.
That's... Plenty... fucking terrified. Can you imagine just walking outside? Oh shit.
Oh, what's the dog barking at? Oh, and you just turn back inside. Go. Did he take the dog back in? Because it doesn't say. He just saw that thing out there with the dog and was like, nope.
He was like, thing was like playing.
It's yours now, dude.
Not my dog anymore.
I want to see what happens when someone sees the Mothman outside their house, real cavalier, pulls their wallet out of their pocket, takes out like a $10 bill, and is like, yeah, I'll have a thing of the two packages of the Thin Mints and one pack of the chocolate sandwich cookies, and just, are you not a girl guide? Oh, my bad.
Like, oh man, the girl guides are getting weird this year.
It's just shrieking at you from like 3 feet away.
Oh my god, my ears. Please.
Why that's would pretty you good, do honestly.
That? So no Thin Mints, huh?
Oh. Sorry, I'm deaf. Can't hear anything.
Sorry, my long-standing skill of making horrible noises.
That, what? To be fair, that's pretty much what I imagined Mothman sounded like.
I'd believe it, yeah.
Hey, nailed it. But, you know. Yeah, sorry about that.
Plenty of people around town saw UFOs or these like weird bird-like entities. And a lot of the weird bird plural. Things seemed to enjoy chasing cars. I mean, presumably plural, because we get a lot of different kind of reports.
So, Mothman?
Well, some of them are Mothman. Like, big, gray flies shaped like a person. Some of them are literally giant birds.
Weird alien like, birds?
There's all kinds of stuff going on right now.
I have a question. Why is it Mothman if they're actually birds?
Well, no, because there's multiple different entities.
Okay, but you said some of them are giant birds, others are giant moths. I didn't hear that part.
Some of them are giant birds, literally like a giant prehistoric bird in the sky. Or there's the Mothman sightings, which is like a gray, shaggy humanoid with giant wings and big red eyes. These are kind of separate reports.
I'm up to speed now.
Altogether, over 100 adults would report sightings of this thing over the course of the next year, as well as innumerable kids and teenagers, and that's Mothman specifically. But people were seeing all kinds of things around the country at the time. Reports of Mothman, reports of UFOs, lights in the sky, giant prehistoric-style birds spotted by airport staff. That last one, Gallipoli, Ohio. So this is actually just across the river and down the road a little ways from Point Pleasant. At 3 in the afternoon, broad daylight, there's these four guys standing out on the airfield. And they're looking and they see this tiny little plane that's starting to descend. All right, they're pulling it in, right? They're all standing there sipping coffee. It's 3 in the afternoon in Ohio. They're just vibing. They're looking at it. There are things coming, you know, what, 70 miles an hour? You know, 12, 13-foot wingspan? It wasn't flapping its... Except they're looking at it for a bit, and they realize that it's not a plane. It's a giant bird with a really long neck. They figure it was flying around 70 miles. It wasn't flapping its wings, but it was, like, craning its head around, like it was perusing the vista, like it was taking in the sights.
Just rubbernecking?
So... weird, dude.
And so one guy, of course, like he runs off to his car to get his camera, and by the time he gets there and comes back, the thing's gone. It's winged its way down the Ohio River. But like that's what I'm talking about, where it was like literally that wasn't like Mothman. That was just a giant bird.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
The sheer like weird variety of stuff happening over that extended period of time feels like a weird overlap, right? Between like different like realities, universes, universe I?
Something like that. Maybe like some weird experimentation.
I don't know. It feels like some kind of thin burial between worlds or something, and everything was just kind of interacting.
Reality was beginning to fall apart.
Yeah, like what was causing that? Was the bridge responsible? We don't know the story of the bridge going up at the end of all that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of one of the great mysteries of this story.
What was the position of the planets? Can we replicate this?
So another fun little bit from the book. So John Keel eventually makes his way over to Point Pleasant. And he gets those teenagers from last episode, the ones who filed the police reports, he gets them together, along with Mary Heyer. And they go for a nighttime drive back to the location near the old building where they'd first seen the Mothman. And this bit is great. This is prime horror movie material. They go back to the abandoned building. They squeeze through the, like, quick fence that the police had put up real quick. Connor Carpenter, Keith, and John all go into this building. And they check it out. There's nothing in it. They're flashing their flashlights around. They climb a ladder up to the second floor. They look around, nothing. Satisfy themselves it's empty. They go to leave the way they came. But as they exit... Connie all of a sudden is like, those eyes, he's here, and just starts flipping the fuck out. They get her outside.
Wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, they get her outside, and John runs back in to check the building. Nothing. He checks around again and absolutely finds nothing. No eyes, no nothing. He goes back outside, and everyone is staring at the other side of the fence towards the rear of the building. And he was like, what the fuck are you guys doing? And they were like, well, we saw someone tall running through the grass, and we heard a sharp metallic sound from inside the building while you were in there. Like, did you knock over a pipe or something? And John was confused, because he hadn't heard a sound while he was in the building, and he hadn't left the building.
Weird.
So whatever they saw and heard was not him. And then, one of the ladies, Mary Millette, suddenly said, I'm bleeding. And sure enough, a trickle of blood was pouring out of one of her ears.
Oh, that's not a good place for blood to be coming out of.
Yeah, I prefer my ears bloodless, actually.
I like my nighttime visits to creepy buildings to conclude with me having the same amount of blood in my body that I have right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could pretty definitively agree with that.
Why? So I was panicking.
Why the ear, though? What would... Something with the brain?
I'll get
the mind?
That. I'll get to that.
Okay, okay.
Some kind of, like, sonic fucking force, dude.
Whoa. The guy was just playing... He was playing Skrillex, dude. It was the 60s, so they weren't ready for it yet. They didn't have the calloused eardrums that today's youth have.
They just never heard dubstep before. They weren't ready.
They didn't listen to Scary Monsters and Nice Spreads for fucking 6 years on repeat.
So everyone's freaking out. It's late at night. This lady's bleeding. Everyone's freaking out. So they leave. Until, and I'll give John Keel this, if the contents of the book are true, and I've got no reason to believe that they're not, he's got great big brass balls. And he drops everyone off, and then he's like, you know what? I'm going to go check that place out again. And he goes, and he drives back outside of town, all alone, check out this abandoned building. Now, John didn't see Mothman. He didn't see UFOs. But he did discover something interesting. He was driving past a particular point on the deserted road when he was just consumed by sudden fear. He was just chilling, vibing. It was late 60s. Maybe he was listening to, like, I don't know, Jefferson Starship or something. And all of a sudden, he's terrified. And he speeds the car up. And after a couple of yards, his fear eases right up. And he's like, what the fuck was that? So he stops and he goes back. And he realized that there was a small stretch of road where when you stepped into it, your panic would rise. And around 15 feet further, the feeling would ease up, like a zone of fear or something.
Going to the fear zone.
The fear zone.
That would absolutely capture my fascination, though.
Well,
can we petition to rename the podcast to Fear Zone?
Fear Zone.
Yeah, sure.
That should be the intro.
I mean,
we could
have a recurring segment where called the Fear Zone. The show within the show, man. Welcome to the Fear Zone.
It should be 3 or 4 minutes of me explaining my various neuroses.
Perfect,
dude. I don't want anything to do with this anymore.
And I'm never going to be good enough.
The Fear Zone. Yeah, you can just keep that to yourself.
What if I die alone?
Everything I touch turns to ash. The Fear Zone. But John Keel noted, though, he was thinking, he was like, could that maybe be some kind of ultrasound? Like we've discussed before, we're like...
Oh, yeah.
You know, sounds
infrasound,
are made
I think it was?
Yeah. Where it's
with a tiger roar.
Yeah. A very deep vibration that can mess with people's inner ear or make people afraid and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because he was thinking maybe that would explain the bleeding ear, too. Now, around this time that all this was starting up, people all around town were starting to get beeps in their phones, weird interruptions in their television and radio services. And often, these interruptions would be occurring around the time that phenomena was witnessed. John Keel, this is so funny. I love this. He had to just be making this shit up because people would, you know, he was starting to get known as the creepy reporter. So we would call him being like, you know, I have been seeing lots of lights in the sky and I want to know what to do. And John Keel would be like, well, a lot of this stuff seems to happen around 9 p.m. So I want you to go get a flashlight and about 9 p.m. go outside your house and look up in the sky. And if you see anything weird, flash the flashlight at it 3 times and just like see what happens. And shit did happen.
Listen, I kind of get it, right? There's weird lights in the sky. The lights are shining light at me. What happens if I shine some light at them? Maybe we could communicate?
It just...
He's just trying stuff, dude, and I dig it. He's
pulling out of a hat, dude.
I
think we need more of that in science and in life. It's just trying stuff to see what happens.
Go outside wearing nothing but a top hat and a nice evening gown. Take your flashlight, spin 3 times.
Strike a pose, yeah. And then point it at the lights in the sky.
I just imagine that he like had the radio on. He was listening to it. They were like, "Oh, there's these lights in the sky. What do I do?" And he was like, "I need you to." And he just like looks around his room and sees like a flashlight. And he's like, "Bring a flashlight outside at." And he looks at the clock and he's like, 9 p.m." And yeah. And then the radio, that song's like, "Knock 3 times on the ceiling." And he's like, "And flash it 3 times. See what happens."
I gotta listen to the radio more, see if I can pick up weird interference, so I know. Early warning sign, dude, just listen to the radio 24/7.
Nope, you hear beeps, it's on. Today.
Yeah. Yikes.
The you know, crazy thing is, like, he's making this shit up, and shit did happen. One lady, she goes outside with her skeptic husband. They see an orange light in the sky, and she flashes the light at it. Nothing happens. And then the light, like, zips away. Weirded out, but hardly convinced. They go back inside, sit down to watch some TV, and all of a sudden the TV shot to static 3 times in a row. Just like bzz, bzz, bzz,
bzz. Goosebumps, dude. Can you fucking imagine?
The same number that she did the flashlight.
I mean, it's one thing to see a mysterious light in the sky. It's another thing to put a signal at it and for it to return the signal.
Potentially, yeah.
Now, by spring of 67, John Keel couldn't publish an article without weird phone calls plaguing the publishers. "How much did Keel pay you to say these things?" someone would demand on the phone. Or they'd get threatening letters arriving, written in cutout magazine letters. You know, "Do not talk about flying saucers."
Oh man, the cutout magazine letters is such a classic. You never see that nowadays. There's never such a personal touch in it.
True. Yeah, what happened to the artisan... The true
ransom note writers, dude. What happened to them?
Yeah. Note. Yeah.
Nowadays, it's just a disposable email, right? And there's like IP addresses and stuff. There's no artifice to it. It's just throwaway. Anonymous threats used to be so much classier.
True. True. But then, the pictures started. It's like we talked about in the MIB episode, where people would just run up to someone who'd seen like Mothman, snap a picture, and then run off. One guy, even he saw Mothman, and a whole ass month later, he comes home to find some random dude ransacking his apartment. The dude sees him, raises a camera, like snaps a picture, which flashes the bulb at the homeowner, who like, you know, briefly blinded, and then the burglar just like darts out the door, but didn't take anything.
Looking for something, dude. Maybe he put something there.
Maybe. And John Keel started getting phone calls. More phone calls. These calls would reach him. Even if he was, like, just driving through a small town and he'd be driving and then he'd just look over and be like, "I'm kind of tired. You know, that hotel looks decent. I'll pull in there." He'd pull in, ask about a room. "Yeah, we got a room available. Can I get some ID?" John would give the guy his ID and the guy at the desk would be like, "Oh, wow, you know, someone left a bunch of messages for you. They must have known you were going to stop here." And they'd give him like a dozen sheets of paper with messages written on them, and most of them were nonsense, and some of them were predictions, and some of them were threats. But it was just like, people knew that he would be going to that hotel before he knew he would be going to that hotel.
Was this like a regular occurrence, or did this happen a couple times?
This was something that was happening over and over while he was going around Point Pleasant.
It's like one time you're like, okay, whatever. But multiple, yeah, yeah, that's a red flag, dude.
I mean, you could leave messages for him everywhere, and then everywhere he went, it would seem like they knew.
True.
Statistically, and if he doesn't go there, he would never know. It would perceptively be accurate.
Fair enough.
And next we come to the predictions. Because you see, people, like, the book's called The Mothman Prophecies.
Oh, yeah.
Well, people started, like,
prophecies.
the letters and phone calls, he started getting predictions given to him. One was that Pope John Paul would go to the Middle East, and there he would be killed, knifed to death in a bloody mess. And afterwards, the Antichrist would rise up in Israel. These are pretty bold claims. But that prediction became a little bit more concerning when the Pope announced that he'd be going to Turkey on a peacekeeping mission. The date claimed for the Pope's death was July 26th, and it was supposed to be preceded by a violent earthquake. So, when on July 22nd, there was a large earthquake in Adapazarı, Turkey, that killed more than 1,000 people, John Keel kind of started to freak out a little bit.
Yeah, it's now, a like at first, too familiar, dude.
Yeah, at first it's like, the Pope's going to die. Yeah, okay. And then, yeah, the earthquake happens, and all of a sudden he's like, you know, maybe I should tell someone about this. Like, maybe I should pass the buck on this one. So he starts calling people to try to tell them, but whenever he would say Pope, the phone would fuzz out and the call would end. Now, as it happened, the Pope landed safely. Nothing happened. But 3 years later, on November 27th in Manila, the nightmare would become real. A man dressed as a priest would spring at the Pope with a knife. Luckily, security would take the knife away and the Pope wasn't hurt.
That's good.
So, It's one of those... I mean, people don't frequently jump out at the Pope with a knife, so it's not like this prediction was totally wrong. It wasn't like he guessed a common occurrence that was eventually going to happen or something. He got the date wrong, but a lot of the little details in there, it's right enough that you start looking at it sideways.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a lot of the Nostradamus stuff, where it's like, on the one hand, it's kind of vague. On the other hand, like, what batting percentage do you need before you start getting a little nervous?
Yeah. The earthquake is a little harder to predict, I think, which is weird that it was accurate.
I think earthquakes happen more often than people trying to kill the Pope, though, don't they?
True.
I suppose.
The whole thing is just a little fucking weird, dude.
The next big prediction was the death of Martin Luther King Jr. Keel was warned that King would be shot in the throat in Memphis on a balcony on February 4th, 1968. And again, this prediction was actually a little bit off, because although he was indeed shot in the throat in Memphis on a balcony, it happened 2 months later on April 4th, 1968. Other predictions given to him included the devaluing of the dollar, which was correct but off by years, that communist China would be allowed in the UN, correct, but in the 60s no one thought that was fucking possible. They warned that Robert Kennedy should stay out of hotels, which Keel noted with a question mark. Like, even Keel's like, what the fuck? And they predicted that John Keel himself would move to a ground floor apartment. And sure enough, a year later, he got a killer deal on a ground floor apartment in Manhattan.
God, imagine looking for apartments and they're like, oh man, hey, this one's a good deal, where is it? And the landlord's like, oh yeah, ground floor. And in the back of your mind, you're just thinking, oh god, fucking damn it.
Voice just starts screaming in the back of your mind.
As it was foretold.
That would be so fucking freaky though, like, because, I mean, you would sort of technically have the choice to be like, no, I'll find a different one, but the deal's so good.
Yeah.
Yep. Right?
It's like the Amityville Horror situation where they were like, wow, you're telling me we can get this house in Amityville with a boathouse for so cheap? And it's like, yeah, but like an entire family was murdered in this like 3 weeks ago. Like all of their furniture is still in the house. And they were like,
oh, it's furnished.
But it's so cheap.
Yeah.
In Amityville, I mean, so classy.
I mean, the tone is slightly different if there's like a murdered family, but if it's just like your moves have been predicted years ahead or months ahead.
It's just that, weird. That sinking feeling of, wow, I'm going to regret this, but at the same time, the price is so low that like I have to do this.
Yeah. It just feels like a weird, like, juxtaposition of, like, fate and loss of free will if that's just called out ahead of time. Like, damn, are my actions my own?
I mean, that's what fate is, right? The loss of.
Yeah. Scary stuff.
Get an apartment on the ground. Would you kindly get an apartment on the ground floor?
That's an old pull at this point.
Yeah, buddy. That's a BioShock 1 reference for any of you who didn't pick up on that, dear listeners. Now, in addition to all of these weird threats, there was one set of threats that really stood out to him. Calls had begun to warn of a disaster on the Ohio River. John would write to Mary Heyer, warning her that, and this is a direct quote, "I have reason to suspect there may soon be a disaster in the Point Pleasant area which will not be related to the UFO mystery. A plant along the river may blow up or burn down. Possibly the Navy installation in Point Pleasant will be the center of such a disaster. A lot of people may be hurt. Don't even hint to anybody anything about this."
I think I'm mixed messages about this.
Well, I mean,
mixed messages is like, hey, something's about to go down, but don't tell anyone.
Well, I mean, what are you gonna say? You know, you're gonna be that guy who runs off through the town screaming, "The end is nigh!" Like,
I mean, at that point, that's kind of your only choice, is to grow a scraggly beard, stop bathing, and get a sandwich board, and walk around on the bridge yelling about the end.
True.
It's actually neat. John Keel actually noted in his book that, like, reacting to all of these things, trying to react to them, made him understand a lot better how people feel, like the Seventh-day Adventists, when that dude did all the math in the Bible and was like, "Oh, this is the day of the second coming," and he and all the people went out to, like, the hilltop and just waited for, like, the rapture that never happened. And then they do it every 7 days, and that's where the Seventh-day Adventists come from. And he said that he understands a lot better how those people feel walking out to that hill and waiting for something that isn't going to happen.
So I can see that. Depressing, dude.
Are they still doing that?
Technically. I mean, I think they just go to church.
Yeah, it's just Sundays.
Yeah.
Other people began to have fears, though, more than just Heyer and Keel. One day, a Mrs. Virginia Thomas saw Mothman outside her house in the middle of the day. It was all gray and larger than a man, but it glided across the ground as though it was flying. And after that sighting, she began to have dreams. Dreams of crowds of people gathered around the Ohio River, which would fill her with confusion and fear. And in her dreams, she'd grab her kids and they'd run away. And she also found that she was thinking of a date, December 15th. And she wasn't the only one. Apparently, Keel was receiving dozens of similar calls, as well as the usual nonsense calls and the prediction calls. The phone company, too, was starting to act oddly. He inquired with them about the possibility of his phone being tapped. You know, there was the fuzzing out when he tried to call about the Pope, and when he tried to call about Martin Luther King Jr., his phone was being disconnected, and people had been calling him in the middle of the night, and when he'd pick up, they would play back recordings of his private phone conversations to him.
That's pretty spooky.
That one's kind of a dead giveaway.
Yeah, so he tells the company, and the company confirms, yeah, there's a drop in voltage in your line that's associated with a wiretap. On top of that, Keel would spend weeks away from home. He'd be out driving around, and he'd come back, and he'd find, like, a $300 phone bill. This is back in the days of landlines. This wasn't, like, a cell phone bill. This was, like, the phone that he wasn't using. They were like, yeah, you used $300 worth of minutes this month. Yeah. Eventually, the company cut his service because he wouldn't pay the bills, because he was like, I haven't even been home. What do you mean? He was still receiving these weird phone calls, though, which should have been impossible. His phone was literally cut off. Finally, on December 15th, John was seated. He's watching a White House ceremony at about 6 p.m. He's trying to ignore this bad feeling that he has. And all of a sudden, there's a voice on the TV.
"We interrupt this program for a special bulletin. A bridge laden with rush hour traffic has just collapsed at Gallipolis, Ohio. Further details as they are available."
keel was flattened. There was no bridge at Gallipolis, Ohio. The bridge was a couple of miles down the river at Point Pleasant. It was the Silver Bridge, which was built in the 1920s. A bridge that Keel himself had crossed over hundreds, if not thousands, of times. 13 months. Exactly 13 months. From November 1966 to December 1967. The 15th of each month. Of teasing, taunting, phenomena, Mothman, UFOs, of wiretaps and MIBs. And it ended like this. With the Ohio River filled with winter ice, with bodies and wrapped Christmas presents bobbing lifelessly. That night, in the sky, a lot of people saw lights, up to a dozen lights, bobbing and dipping and changing colors. And in the years that followed, a lot of the people involved in the case would pass away, many of them at very young ages. Some of the people that saw Mothman himself would die within 6 months. He just appeared, along with the MIBs and the UFOs, like some ghastly specter of death. And then after the incident at the Silver Bridge, it all just stopped. No more Mothman. No more sightings, nothing. And John ends his book with a line. It's a Charles Fort quote. If there is a universal mind, must it be sane?
Ooh, that's good.
So my question to you boys. So what do you think Mothman was? Do you think this was an alien in conjunction with, like, the UFOs? Do you think it was some kind of alien creature? Maybe the UFOs were trying to, like, capture? Like, it got loose? I've heard that theory before, that it was, like, an alien pet.
Oh, neat.
And maybe
I hadn't thought of that one. I had a couple of theories that it was, like, some kind of entity that was, like, unable to directly influence events, but was still trying to, like, prevent a disaster. So it was still, like, warning him somehow.
I think it's more like a manifestation. You know, like, it's not...
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's more of, like... What the fuck is the word, dude?
Some like kind of psychic entity. Phenomena? Like a tulpa?
I don't know what that is. But yeah, so something like that, probably.
Tulpas are a whole other thing for later, I think.
It's like a thought form that is given life by people pouring thought and energy into it.
Yeah, sure. That's kind of what I meant. But yeah, something like that, you know, it's like, but not necessarily from this reality, right? Like, talking about the bridge thing, right? That's not where the bridge actually was. Some kind of, like, alternate universe thing creeping through.
Oh, maybe.
Did I hear that part right?
Yes, but I think that it was a case of Point Pleasant was a really small town, whereas Gallipoli was the nearest, like, reasonable-sized city.
Gotcha. Oh, like a landmark.
Yeah, that's, I think that's what it was.
Recorded like that. I thought it was, like, literally, like, this bridge that was supposed to be there, but is actually over here. That makes more sense, though.
I thought you were getting at, like, he was getting mixed messages from, like, a parallel universe, and that's how he was getting all these
mostly accurate
predictions.
Yeah. It would be sweet.
And that was my next point, right? Like, so the bridge was the first one I was going to say, but that was wrong. And then, like, all of the predictions that he got, like, were similar enough that you're kind of like, yeah, all right, but, you know, something was definitely off about it.
Yeah.
Maybe in the other world they weren't, right?
I mean, a lot of this also, I was thinking, might have been, like, multiple assassinations. Earthquakes can sort of be predicted.
Sort of.
I think we've got seismological measurements and stuff and tools for that.
Did they have that at the time? I don't know. I don't think so.
It's pretty old. It's just a needle. It's just a very sensitive needle end.
Yeah, but did they have it? Paper. But did they have it in the late 60s in Turkey?
I don't know.
Because, I mean, I believe that we had them here, but I don't know about Turkey. I don't know what Turkey was like in the 1960s.
Seismology in the 60s.
And were you able to, like, directly predict where they were going to be and how strong they were going to be with this device?
I'm not a seismologist, but scientists found that instruments that detected earthquakes could also detect bomb tests. So that's
yeah, because it's anything fairly, that rumbles the ground.
They had nuke. Yeah, oh, they had nukes in the '60s. They definitely had like seismology in the '60s.
Yeah, I mean we had nukes in the '40s.
Yeah, yeah, they definitely had seismology in the '60s. But anyways, what if it was like a government agent who was trying to like covertly leak stuff, and he was just like trying to be subtle
with the calls, like making the phone calls.
That yeah, makes the predictions.
Sense. I thought that you meant Mothman, and I was like, imagine. Being
I was starting to get to that, and then I was like, wait, that doesn't quite make sense. He couldn't be the Mothman, but he could be the predictions.
Johnson, like an FBI intern, just runs up all like red faced, like, yes, sir. And it's like, get in the Mothman outfit and get in that old lady's backyard right now.
Crank the bass. We have to hit them with infrasound. Run by in the costume.
You gotta give that lady pink eye. Oh, man. But,
but the predictions, the prophecies, maybe. Like,
yeah, I mean that
because the Martin Luther King thing was admitted to be like a government thing, wasn't it?
I think that we're pretty sure it was.
I'm pretty sure they admitted it at one point.
It's the same shit that they tried to do to Fidel Castro like 200 times.
Yeah. So like, maybe there was someone who was wise who was trying to like warn them of the plan, because I'm sure they planned that shit way in advance. And the Pope thing was they just, like, put that off for a little while.
Maybe.
Who knows?
But the Tulpa theory...
Sorry?
I was going to say, the Tulpa theory, I think, is interesting because it's... People have much the same idea about the Men in Black. And that it might be some kind of Tulpa or demonic entities from another dimension or plane of existence that we have kind of allowed in, and that's why they act so weird.
Weirdly enough, I lean more towards that than the Tulpa.
Isn't that kind of what the Tulpa is? That's what you just said, right?
Sort of. The Tulpa itself is purely a thought form, right? It's something that people have created.
Imagination-given form, basically.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what we were just saying, though.
The other thing that I'm talking about is that maybe people think that maybe it was Aleister Crowley when he was doing his rituals may have opened a way for other entities to come in, and now that they're here, they're feeding off of they're feeding off the fear and the thoughts that people have.
Okay, gotcha.
I'd more towards demons than Tulpas.
I guess,
but like, who? Because if it's a thought form, it had to come from somewhere and then would gain strength as it went on. So, like, who made the Mothman, right? Because he had to originate from, if he's a thought form, he had to originate from thought, which means a person is responsible.
It's easier to rationalize him being a demon than someone thinking of this weird flying bird thing with red eyes.
And it being real?
One lonely moth lady in West Virginia just needed a boyfriend so bad.
Someone with a really weird fetish and a powerful psychic imagination.
I mean, it was the late 60s. I think that people were doing a lot of acid.
Yeah.
Oh, people were doing a lot of acid in the 60s. You got me there.
Maybe someone had a bad trip and was like, it's the Mothman, and like manifested it.
Maybe. I mean, there was a lot of like weird psychic research around that time too, wasn't there?
Yeah, government research.
Yeah, maybe somebody with latent psychic powers dropped some acid and manifested the Mothman.
Yeah, just moth-infested it, dude.
Ah, you're better than that.
doing my Pip cosplay, dude.
I expect this from Pip, Jake, but I expect better from you.
Yeah, I would expect me to make a joke that bad, but I thought you had higher standards.
So you don't have to, dude.
Taking the bullet for him, I respect that.
Yeah. That fruit was hanging so low it didn't even land in my field of view.
So, my Final question for you guys. Do you think that the MIBs were kind of part of the phenomena along with Mothman and the UFOs, or do you think they were there investigating John or the UFOs or Mothman?
Like in tandem or because of?
Yeah, like any of those. What do you think? What was the MIBs' place in all this?
I think it's a little of both. I think they're all kind of tied up together.
Right, like
I
was saying,
I think the MIBs had something to do with the predictions. I think the Mothman had something to do with omens.
Mm. What's your theory, Jake?
So, thinking about it a little bit more, I think the idea of it being some, like, some alien form, some alien species that, like, because there's UFOs, there's Men in Black, and then there's the Mothman, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe the Mothman either escaped or was running from the two, or at least the aliens, and then the Men in Black were there to, like, check it out and see what's going on, keep tabs on the whole thing, right? So I definitely think they're connected, but I don't know to what degree. And, like,
the Mothman was, like, the Mothman was, like, the dog that got loose, and the UFOs were, like, the owner, and the Men in Black are, like, the animal control officers.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
The UFOs, like, we have to get our pet before it gets brought to the pound. Like,
yeah, I can definitely see it being something like that, right?
It will take us 30 cow anuses to get the Mothman back if he is impounded.
I hear alien impression is something else.
Well, it's a pretty banger story, dude. Never heard this before.
Yeah, I've never actually delved that deep into the Mothman stuff, so this is neat. I only knew, like, little crumbs here and there. This is cool.
Yeah, it's a neat story, and it's another instance of UFOs and high strangeness happening together.
Yep.
All that other stuff was so weird that we kind of just, like, we never went back to that, like, small zone of fear. I still wish I knew what was up with that.
Okay, the one other piece of info that I had on that was that he went back the next day, like, during when the sun was up, and it wasn't there. He could just, like, walk around just fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I would have been out there with, like, chalk and a clipboard, like, making notes, and be like, what the fuck is this? Finding out, like, the exact bounds of the area.
Yeah, he went back the next day. Triangulating and shit. Gone. Well, that's it for us. We don't have all the answers. Because if you spend too much time asking questions, weird government dudes from three-letter agencies will come to your house and photograph you like the paparazzi going after early 2000s Britney Spears. We want to thank everyone for their support and their listens. Visit us on Twitter at OOTA_pod, or join our Facebook group. And finally, we do have a Patreon at patreon.com/OOTAP. That's patreon.com/OOTAP. A good night from us to you, and remember, everything has an element of the unknown. Good night.